Welcome back to episode 211 of Tall Boy Radio. And as we always say, who knows where it goes when the beer flows? Well, it's flowing all the way to Florida tonight, so we'll be chatting to a couple of guys from there. But first, I really need to wish Tall Boy Radio a happy birthday. 4 years today, we recorded our first episode. And from humble beginnings, we've got a couple of Hollywood A-listers of the future, no doubt. So, would you guys like to introduce yourselves? Benjamin, we know you like to talk, do you? So I'll let you go first.
Benjamin L. Newmark, here today to talk about A Cold Grave, where I get to play Roger for the second time in a DBS film movie.
Indeed. Indeed. And Brendan?
I'm Brendan. I was the director of the movie. I am president of DBS Films. Roger Project or A Cold Grave was our 13th, lucky 13th movie. So that'll be the one we talk about today.
Amen, amen. So yeah, so last time that Ben was on, he trailed the idea of the Roger movie. And obviously now it is available out there. So if you're in the UK, the US, or wherever you're tuning in from, any of the 62 countries that we're listening to, and Amazon is available, get yourself onto Amazon Prime and go and watch that movie, because I can tell you now it is fantastic. I've watched it and it's a very, very reasonable download price. So it's well worth doing. Did you want to tell us then about the character of Roger? Can we just relive the legend that is Roger?
Yes, but first I want to congratulate you on being top 50 in Cambodia. I think that's an impressive feat for anyone to accomplish, having a top 50 podcast in Cambodia, because you know how hard it is to crack that top 50 in Cambodia.
It's a difficult market.
Roger is, you know, I've been acting for 22 years. And I used to have a rule of I'm never going to play the same character twice, because as a character actor, I always like to try different things. So I've played, you know, like a drunk writer, a drunk rock star, a drunk truck driver, always trying to break out of these certain roles. And with Roger, I got a chance to really branch out in Force of Death the first time he appeared as Moonshiner. And that movie, just in terms of movies, I loved it. I love that film. I actually love a lot of Brendan's films, not to kiss ass in any kind of way, because that would be weird. But I do love a lot of his work. And Forest of Death is just a film I genuinely love.
Yeah.
And that character was something that I never wanted to let him go. Even after we were done shooting, I would text him all the time and we'd go back and forth with just ridiculous ideas of what Roger could get himself into. And somewhere along the way, he decided that we should do a Roger movie, which sounded like a joke, but then it happened. And I got a chance to jump into his boots again, but this time in a very different way, where a lot of the fun and campiness of Forest of Death Roger went away. And this time we had a broken version of that character. We had a more grounded version of this caricature. It was almost as if we took a cartoon character from, you know, the 80s, and now he's got a Max show. So now he's gonna be dark and gritty. And I loved that opportunity, because I actually got to not just revisit a character I love playing, but I got to add layers to him. I had dimensions to him. And then we got to see this character completely break. And then we got to take him on this wild and crazy journey to see him go from what we knew him as, you know, this fun loving kind of predatory in a fun sense, to the victim, to the person being affected. And we got to completely break him. And it was such a good time as an actor, as a human being. It sucked. It was terrible. As an actor, it was so great to go through all those different avenues.
I don't doubt it. So we watched The Forest of Death when you first came on the podcast. We watched that originally. And I got to tell you, Brendan, I think that was a really, really enjoyable film. Roger is one of those characters that you warm to, despite the fact you don't really know what he's all about in that movie. Is he thoroughly evil? Is he one of the bad guys? Is he one of the people that's tormenting these people in their house? So what was it like creating that character and then seeing Benjamin like bring it to life on screen? And just how does that process work?
Well, it was definitely interesting with Ben. You know, as an indie studio, our access to actors is limited. We can't do, you know, gigantic casting searches. We're kind of limited with, you know, the people in Florida or, you know, the talent that's just starting out, which is completely fine because we're just starting out too. We're all starting at the same place. you know, working with actors, you know, it's always a struggle to get on the same page. And I think that is the biggest thing I've learned with directing is not everyone thinks it's, you know, getting on set and telling people what to do, but it's really just kind of taking what's in your head and being able to explain it as quickly as possible. And, you know, one thing with Benjamin was when I did the casting interviews with him, you know, we were on the same page immediately. We grew up with the same movies. The one thing that I kind of brought up was like, hey, I want to do a shapeshifter movie and I want to be kind of similar to The Thing, but I want to be like a campy version of The Thing. I love 80s horror movies. I love 80s camp. And I wanted to try my hand at campy horror movie. And he immediately knew exactly what I was trying to get. And, you know, when I talk to actors, they say, yeah, I've watched all these movies. I understand it. But, you know, some of them just aren't kind of grasping what you want, or I'm just not being clear myself. Ben right off the bat knew it, and he was willing to put in the effort. And, you know, honestly, if you look at the first script, the first iteration of that script is completely different than the actual Forest of Death character. The Roger character that I wrote was supposed to be kind of like the Harbinger character, the gas station attendant, that, hey, don't go in the woods, it's going to be bad. And just working with Ben, taking his feedback, you know, taking his ideas that he had for that character, that's how Roger got started. And I'm really happy that we kind of met, because that character has been the number one DBS character that we've had out of all the characters that we've had. People have resonated with him. They say, hey, I want to have another Roger character. I want to see him again. And hence, this is how he got his own movie. The reaction was so overwhelmingly positive that I had no other choice but to put him in a movie.
That's cool. That's cool. And that is one thing. So if you go onto IMDb now and you look at those two movies, every little bit of feedback virtually has a reference to Roger in it. And it's amazing how characters like that can resonate. Now, same as yourself, I grew up watching 80s horror and 70s horror. You know, that was the sort of stuff I grew up with. I absolutely love that kind of thing. And I can see it in your movies. You can tell that you guys buy into it and you love it as well. And Roger would have been right in place in something like The Evil Dead, Last House on the Left. He would have fitted right into one of those movies, wouldn't he?
Oh, absolutely. That was, you know, I love The Thing. I just love Kurt Russell in general. So when we were going back to Forest of Death, we both had this mutual love of Kurt Russell. That's the long hair. That's the beard, especially in A Cold Grave. I wanted that look of Kurt Russell in The Thing with the bushy beard and the scraggly hair. And then I just messied it up a little bit, but it was all from that love of that genre, that time period, that practical effect where you're not just going to, you know, try and rely on CGI. You're not going to try and rely on just pop scares. You're going to have someone out there and you're going to use what's real. You're going to make it tangible. And that's something I loved about those old 80s films, and even some of the great 90s films, was how real it all felt. And I can tell you that A Cold Grave, everything that happened was real. There was nothing there that was fake. Maybe one shot was computer generated, but everything else really was happening to Roger. All the things where he's getting beaten and thrown and tossed around, that was all very real because we used everything practical. There was nothing fake about it.
Oh, man. And is that a big part of DBS films? Is that what you do? Rather than using CGI, taking it back. You know, when I think about films like The Evil Dead, where there was literally no CGI in that original movie, just actors working with what they got and being quite clever, manipulative with the props around them.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, right off the bat, I do not like CGI. I'm a practical effects guy. Like I said, I'm a 70s and 80s horror guy. I think that The Thing and some of those movies, like Reanimator and some of these crazy movies, hold up with the stuff that's been done today. If we ever do branch into special effects, more CGI stuff, which is happening with the use of AI and some of the other editing tools that are coming out, you know, it's looking good. You're talking about the Meth Gator looking great in Benjamin's next movie. I think it's something we can explore because the cost is coming down. But at the same time, I just think that, you know, special effects, if they're not done right, kind of ruin the immersion of the movie. And, you know, if I can get the practical effects, Tegan, who does our practical effects now, is very, very good. And you'll see in the next couple of movies, her work has been absolutely fantastic because it's something that we, you know, I personally put an emphasis on. I said I wanted better special effects. I want better practical effects. And it's just something we're going to continue to go, because I do think that if you can get really good gore shots in there, if you can get really good practical effects, it just, it's a way to kind of cheat our budget, because it's like, how can we take our very small independent budget and, you know, put us up there against Netflix? It's very, very difficult, but if you do it clever, and one of that ways is we don't have millions of dollars for special effects, but we can kind of chop people's arms off or kind of, you know, slit throats or do kind of cool things like that. You know, we can kind of compete with them. And the good news is that the people who like the 70s and 80s and are fans of practical effects love that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like a built-in audience already.
Well, that's the thing. There is an audience out there, and there's an audience that buys into these kind of things. I think in terms of Hollywood, when you look at the movies that are being made now, often the case, they're being remade because there's a real shortage on ideas. And the fans of indie horror really appreciate that originality, that somebody's actually doing something, like you say, with practical effects and doing something just a little bit different. So in terms of DBS Films, then, how did that get started?
So DBS Films, the actual film aspect of the business, started in 2018. So my background is I have a publishing company, which is DBS Publishing. So we started with Kindle books, and we kind of branched out and has done very, very well. We have a ton of horror books, mysteries, thrillers. And, you know, I've always wanted to make films. And, you know, I graduated college and I obviously wanted to make films. It's very, very difficult. And you have two options. One is to go to film school and put yourself in $100,000 worth of debt and hope that it works out. Or two is to try and start making things. And I chose the try and start making things route. And instead of, you know, to go in there and make a movie, you obviously need hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars and the right connections and a staff and team of people who know what they're doing. So I said, all right, well, let's start with the most basic thing, which is a script. And at the time, we worked very closely with Kindle Publishing, which is the Kindle came out at that time. So we got very lucky and we just made our scripts books. And so that kind of started out. And now we're at the point where we're taking the books and we're kind of making them into movies. So we're kind of transitioning mediums. And that's kind of where DBS Film started. The error that I made was I was like, all right, if you can write a book, you can make a movie. It's very easy to do. It's not. It's very, very difficult. And I give people who make movies, especially indie movies, the utmost respect because of how many people are involved in this process and how difficult it is to basically have, you can have the best script ever. And if you can't execute on it when you're making the movies, you know, you're going to have a subpar movie. And that's kind of like what we're learning. And we're still growing. Our movies are very independent still. But we've been able to cultivate a fan community of 20,000 people. I've met great people like Benjamin. We have very talented people that are working for us now. And our goal is to do stuff like this, where it's basically release a movie very quickly. We just had two releases pretty much within the last 4 months. We have three movies that we're going to release in the next 3 or 4 months. And it's just basically go on podcasts or go meet with people in the community and just, hey, what did you like? What didn't you like? What can we get better? So instead of making one movie every 2 years, we have a little bit different model where we make a lot of movies. We try and get feedback on those movies, and then we try and get better with each movie that we make.
That's impressive. Yeah, that's impressive. And fair play for having a dream and going out there, because there's plenty of people out there, I don't doubt, will listen to this podcast when we release it on the audio. And they will have had dreams about making movies. They will have had dreams about being an actor and then probably haven't known where to start. So I mean, that's fantastic. You've done that. Benjamin, how did you hear about this project?
Well, I first started with them, and it's a weird story because I had been on Tubi and I was watching this film called Girl in Cabin 13. And I was about halfway through, and I've got kids, so I can never just sit down and watch a movie. I could watch 15 minutes, 30 minutes, and it takes me forever to watch a movie because I'm constantly being interrupted. So I was about halfway through. And, you know, just like any normal actor, I'm looking at backstage, actors access, Facebook, just trying to find my next job. And I saw this posting for a movie called Shapeshifter from DBS Films. And I read it and I was like, oh, I understand this. I know what this is. And then I saw DBS Films and I said, huh, that's familiar. And it occurred to me, I was watching one of their films, which I was really into with Stu. And I was very into that film. So I applied for that. and I auditioned for the lead and the second lead, and I bombed it. Terrible. Such a crappy audition. I was abysmal. And I emailed Brennan. I think I apologized for how bad my audition was. And then I saw this other character, which was written as an older character, that gas station character, that crazy character from the Friday 13th movie. I said, hey, I'm younger, but can I audition for this? And in very Brendan fashion, he gave me a very short reply of go for it, which the more you get to know Brendan, he's a man of few words when he's working. You know, you may get one or two. And it just, it felt right when I read for it. I had to go in my bathroom. I didn't have a lot of lighting in there. There was kids everywhere. And it just, it felt right. And for that character, he got back to me. And from there, we just started developing. And again, it was just that we understood where we wanted to go. We grew it. When it came time to film it, crushed it. And then it just spun off into A Cold Grave, which was originally the Roger Project. So it was this little bit of just, I kind of have an idea. He's got a similar idea. I think we're on the same page. We're definitely on the same page. We know where we're going with it. And now we're growing it.
It's impressive, isn't it, really? You know, that you can take an idea like that. And it's just interesting for me as a film fan on the outside looking in, seeing how it builds. And like you say, when you mentioned like the shapeshifter idea for the first film, A Forest of Death, you see it, and it's a great idea. And like Tyler Miller's character in it, you know, he's fantastic. And then, you know, there's one point when he's at the door and he's also at the window, and you know that one of them is a shapeshifter. And it is a fantastic thing. So with Stuart, who listens, he's got a question as well. So he's a huge fan of things like zombie movies. Is that something you looked at, or is that one of those genres that's probably been, especially with Walking Dead and what have you, is that market oversaturated now, do you think?
No. And I have three reasons why.
Go on.
One, there may or may not be zombies in A Cold Grave. You should watch it. Two, I do have a zombie short film coming out later this year. And three, there is a DBS idea for a straight zombie film. So no, there's definitely no oversaturation with three things currently going on and five Walking Dead shows and Dawn of the Dead 17th remakes and so many Night Living Dead. There's not an oversaturation. What there is, though, is sometimes a lack of quality, which I can promise you with what I know about the upcoming films that I may be associated with, the quality's very high. Also, you should watch that Daryl Dixon Walking Dead show. It looks amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair comment. So it's an interesting thing. And like you say, it's doing it right. In terms of The Walking Dead, I loved it when it first started. You talk about the Romero movies. They, for me, are, you know, they're way up there, you know, with the kind of films that I absolutely love to watch. And I would back you guys. I would back you guys to be able to do something along those lines with your love of horror. I think you can bring the passion into that. Could we see Roger fighting zombies in the near future?
I think we could. I have been trying to make a zombie movie since I started the company. I'm a big zombie guy. I grew up on zombie movies, and it's just getting enough talent as far as the makeup and special effects department. We have enough fans now that we can easily cast to have a ton of zombies. So we have that resource checked. If Roger, you know, wants to come out here and do a zombie movie, which I guarantee he would, we have him checked. I do have, because we kind of try and figure out what movies we're going to make this year, and a zombie movie is sort of on the cut. So we'll see. It's just going to depend on, you know, just resources that we have, how we do for the year. But I've always wanted to make a Christmas movie. I think like the Christmas movies are kind of cool as far as like horror movies. And I thought
I wanted A Cold Grave to be a Christmas movie. I wanted that.
That'd be a tough one. But I thought a Christmas zombie movie might not be a bad idea. So we'll kind of see what we're trying to work with here. But it depends on a lot of things. But whether or not we do it this year or next year, a zombie movie from DBS will be coming. I think in The Cold Grave, and I don't want to spoil it, but that was kind of, you know, an attempt to just see what our makeup level is now, what, you know, we're kind of working with as far as zombies. But I'm a big fan 28 Days Later. I'm super excited for the new one that's going to be coming out. I've always been a fan of zombies. So you know, DBS Zombies will be the fast ones. They're not going to be the slow ones. They'll be quick and terrifying.
Call of the Dead remake.
So, keep your eyes out. You know, it kind of our process as far as the movies that we try and make and that we kind of stack up for the year ebbs and flows. Like with Cold Grave, Force of Death, people loved Roger. We snuck in Cold Grave real quick, but I do want to make a zombie movie. I'd love to do one.
Yeah, I like the idea. I mean, I've got to be honest, as a guy who absolutely loves Christmas, you know, it's Christmas and horror are a difficult sell for me. There are a few good ones out there. Like, I love the original Black Christmas. I think that's a fantastic film. But, you know, that would be interesting. I've never seen a zombie movie set at Christmas. That could be very, very interesting.
Yeah, you probably should have shut up on that idea.
We'll see. Our friends over at Blumhouse Studios will probably come out with something before us.
They're just at Thanksgiving. Christmas is probably going to come next. You definitely shouldn't have shared that with the entire world, especially Cambodia.
Yeah, if the Cambodians get wind of this, I tell you what, don't you worry about that.
Man, in terms of Roger, I'll do whatever Brendan tells me to do at this point. I mean, we just did another one over the summer where I didn't play Roger. And the look on his face and Kellen's face and Dylan's face of seeing me do a different character was worth it more than anything else. Just to hear Kellen say, "I didn't know you could act," was one of the greatest highlights ever.
There's a backhanded compliment. So what's the deal with the hair, dude? How can you be Roger with that haircut? That's way too smooth to be Roger.
So I am growing it back, just in case. You never know. But what happened was we did a Girl in Cabin 14. And it was a different character. It wasn't Roger. And it was more based off Ari Gold from Entourage. It was kind of the initial influence. And I also wanted to, as I'm a big wrestling fan, everything I do in life is wrestling based. And I love the look of Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes with that blonde hair and bloodied. And this is one of the few times that, you know, I got to get bloodied. And I said, wow, wouldn't it look great to get some blood in that blonde hair, like the way Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes did. So I dyed my hair very blonde for this movie. And I messed it up really badly. And to dye it back would have cost an absurd amount of money because I really did a bad job dyeing. It looks great for the film, but as a real life thing, it looked not great. And for me in my day life, wasn't great. So my only thing was to either spend a lot of money to dye it back or just cut my hair and grow it back. Now, as it turns out, when I cut my hair, I apparently also murdered my entire career because most of my bookings seem to be a guy with long hair, despite the several auditions I got where they wanted me to play a lead as like an action hero. It doesn't really work. It's not my type. You can't be 140 pounds to be an action star. So it is growing back. But yeah, it wasn't something I really wanted to do. It was kind of something I had to do to get my hair back. It's coming back. Yeah, it wasn't something I really wanted to do. It was more of, oops, I dyed my hair so terribly bad that I got to start over again.
Well, let's go to another character of yours with long hair, just taking it away from DBS Films for just a second there. So Brendan mentioned the Meth Gator film, which if you are in the UK, you can watch. It is available now on Sky Sci-Fi Channel. Get on there. You can download it and watch it whenever you like. I've watched it twice. So tell us a little bit about that one then, Benjamin, because you are in it, you know.
It's not just me. It's also Stuart Maxheimer, who is a multiple film DBS alum, who is in A Cold Grave, whose ass I've kicked twice now. I kicked his ass in A Cold Grave, and I kicked his ass in Meth Gator. What's even crazier is we shot those scenes exactly 1 week apart, which means on a Tuesday, I was kicking Stuart Maxheimer's ass as Roger on the ground somewhere in Florida. And then a week later, I was kicking Stuart Maxheimer's ass again in Claremont, Florida at Kim Kahana's stunt school. So it went from, you know, Brendan says DBS is very small. But when you look at their quality and when you look at their reach, they're not small at all. I get enough hate messages to know that they're not small. I get enough love messages to know they're not small. And the Asylum, you know, they've made 6 Sharknado movies. They've made films that Brent and I both grew up on. This is one of those opportunities that you dream about as a little fat kid to say, one day I'd like to fight a 3-headed megalodon or megapython for Super Bowl. Like, these are things you want to do. So that opportunity was just insane. It was mind-blowing that I could go be on the set of an Asylum film, not just be on the set of an Asylum film, but I get that Drew Barrymore role. I get that first kill role. I get to be the meth in the meth gator. And sharing the scene with me is little cousin Oliver, the voice of Michelangelo, Robbie Rist, which just is insane because I had no idea who the guy was the entire day. I just knew him as Robbie, this really cool guy that was super nice to me. But on top of that, what made it even better was I got to share the screen with Stuart Maxheimer, the star of A Girl in Cabin 13, my co-star in A Cold Grave, and whatever the hell he calls A Haunting of a Murder House 3.0, Stuart's in that too. And he's just such a great guy to work with. He's one of my favorite humans because he's such a good guy. And I messaged him the day before just on a hunch, like, hey, are you in this? Yes, I am. I was like, I don't know why I thought you would be in this, but this role seems perfect for you. And he plays the good guy. This dude's always the good guy who ends up losing his mind or something goes wrong. And in this one, he plays the good cop and I play the bad guy because that's just what I do. And I got to kick his ass. But we also got to open the Asylum's Attack of the Meth Gator film together with characters that are shockingly similar to characters we just played in A Cold Grave, where he's the good clean cut guy because that's what Stu is. And I'm either the moonshiner or the meth head or whatever bad character I am. And going into that day, you know, we had a script and Stu memorized it because he's a classically trained professional actor. And I'm a classically trained professional actor who says, huh, scripts, we don't use these in indie films. And we got there that morning and he said, you know your lines? I said, absolutely not. I said, I read it. I can't see this happening because this whole scene takes place at night. We're shooting in the day. And sure enough, right before we start shooting, Christopher Olsen Ray, Emmy-winning director, director of Three-Headed Shark Attack, comes up to us and he goes, so how are you guys with improv? And my eyes lit up. And I said, funny enough, that's all I know how to do. And he goes, great, because as you can see, the scene's not nighttime. We're not on a dock. It's daylight. And we're in the middle of a field. What can you do for me? And I said, I got you. Don't worry about it. And coming off A Cold Grave, where all of Roger's stuff was completely improvised because of the insane pre-production we did on that film, where I almost had 17 mental breakdowns every day going into a film where the guy wants us to improvise on this big budget Asylum movie, it felt great. And we were able to improvise an opening, confrontation, and a reason to get out of there. And a reason for my character to become the meth in Meth Gator, which is awesome. It felt like such a full circle moment, and especially to have Stu there with me the entire time, which is, it was incredible. And I hope that bleeds off into elevating everything that DBS does, and hopefully elevating everything A Cold Grave will do.
I hope so. I hope so, because I think this is where DBS is quite unique, isn't it, Brendan? In terms of where you build the interest, you bring the fan into the movie in more way than one, don't you? So you have your Discord channel, but you also have a way that you can actually, you know, if you're passionate about horror movies and you're based, obviously, I would say in the Florida area, there's a great way that you can actually have an opportunity to be in these movies as well, isn't there?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're just a very fan-centric company. Our whole goals, our metrics are just based on finding one fan and then finding another and then finding another. And, you know, however we need to do that, you know, that's my job to go out there and try and find them. The good news is there's a lot of people who love indie horror. And it's started with A Girl in Cabin 13. And really, if you look at our filmography before then, you know, our films did really well. They're in the charts on Amazon. They had mixed reviews, very independent stuff. But really, Girl in Cabin 13 was the first one where we got proper distribution. The movie got picked up by Tubi, which is a huge company in America. It's just ad streaming now. So it's like, it's free, but there's ads on it. And it was the number one movie on Tubi. So it's millions and millions of views right off the bat. And basically, it showed me that there's a lot of people who don't really care about the budget. They just want a good story and they want something unique. And I think that's kind of like what we bring here at DBS is, you know, we're not going to have a $1 million budget, but our stories are fun. You could follow our progress because we continually push out movies. So you can see us getting better. And then we are very fan based. So we have a very large Discord server that you can come in and join. You could talk to myself, very active on Reddit. We're very active on Facebook. If you ever see any of our ads on Facebook or just our communities on Facebook, people will come in there and they'll express their opinions, good or bad, on the movies. And obviously I'm there to thank them and critique them or ask them, you know, why do you think that? Because that's the way we get better. We take our fan feedback, we apply it, and we get better with each movie. But we also cast from our Discord. You know, the people who are very passionate about these movies are the ones that I want to work with. With actors on an indie set, it's kind of difficult. You never know, you know, what kind of level of professionalism they're going to come in with, like what's their devotion level to it. We've had, you know, people, a mixed bag. Some people come in, they're super passionate. Other people are just, hey, you know, it's a paycheck, which is fine in itself. But where we're at right now, we really need the passionate people because—
Who are some of those paycheck ones?
No, we don't. I focus on the good. So basically the people who come in through the Discord, you know, they basically, they're the most passionate people we can find. They come in and they do an excellent job. And we cast about 60 people, I think, last year in all our movies. If you watch The Cold Grave, you'll see the Ouija scene. Those are all people from our Discord. All the zombies at the end were from our Discord. So basically, those are horror passionate people. They love our movies. They love horror. Their dream is to basically be in a horror movie. The one zombie who is kind of dressed like a old school West Virginia miner, his name is Irish. We met him at a horror convention and he's just a horror fan and he watches all our stuff, was super enthusiastic. We said, we got to get this guy in here. And he did a great job, did such a great job. We put him in the next two movies. So
incredible.
You will literally see, if you join our community, opportunities for casting. We always cast from the Discord first. And the people who get casted earn it. They're really good actors. We've worked, Tatum was from the Discord, and she did a great job in this one. She's going to do a great job in the Bigfoot movie that we have coming up next. So there's talented people out there. They just need a shot. The same way we need a shot, you know? So basically, everyone's kind of working together to kind of, you know, work on their dreams. And like I said earlier, you know, instead of, you know, wishing about this and kind of like what you said, everyone's just kind of sitting there. Should I be an actor? Should I do a movie? You have an opportunity. All you have to do is give us a self-tape and we'll basically, if you're good enough, if you're passionate enough, we'll get you in one of these movies.
That is phenomenal. That is literally making people's dreams come true. But it's also a very clever little bit of marketing as well. Because like you say, you're talking about people who are already passionate about this community and you're buying them in and you're bringing them in. And I know this, given the opportunity, if I was ever in one of those, I would share it to the moon and back and be telling everybody about it. And then I know everybody who I know who's interested and passionate about horror movies is then also going to be jumping on board and bringing everybody on board with them. It's a fantastic, I mean, word of mouth, you can't put a price on that sometimes. So that is a very, very clever piece of marketing. Well,
Brendan, isn't your plan to start auditioning internationally and start flying people in from different countries like the United Kingdom?
You 100% can audition and we will, if you get the role, I will fly you in. There is no, we'll fly people worldwide. It doesn't matter. We'll take you here. You come down to Disneyland or Universal, whichever one you prefer. But yeah, I mean, if like, I'm dead serious. And the next one we have, the next time you see it, we'll send you a link your way. And all you got to do is just record yourself reading the lines. And you never know. Now, that being said, we do have a lot of auditions. We have about 6,000 per movie. But that being said, you know, the people who are passionate about this stuff, you know, if you want to do it and you get selected, we'll fly you out here. It's not a problem.
That's cool. I mean, if you ever need a 6'5" bald fat dude, then you know what I mean? I'm your man.
Oh, 100%. We'll put a Bigfoot suit on you.
Yeah, I could have been Bigfoot.
There you go.
I could have been Bigfoot. Yeah. Yeah, I am 6'5".
Holy Lord. Roger versus Bigfoot. I know who we're getting.
Oh, dude, yeah. I'm not quite hairy enough for Bigfoot, though, I suspect.
It's a mask and special effects. You're fine. Just be tall.
Well,
you can just, do the one just... thing I can't do. You can just be naturally tall.
Well, it would only be the hair. I don't think I'd need a mask for Bigfoot. I think the face is already there, to be fair. Tell us a little bit, because I'll tell you the other thing that I really, really like about your movies as well is the artwork and the cover work for it. Because that, for me, you know, as a kid, literally in the UK, like, you know, when I was about 12, 13, me and my brother, who's 3 years younger than me, used to go to the old video shops with a note that my nan would write for us saying, please let my two grandsons have 18 certificate movies. Honestly, they'll be fine with it. So we were watching stuff like American Werewolf and London Night of the Demon when we were literally just kids. And I absolutely loved it. But what buys you in, and this is what I love about that, is it was the artwork that suckered you in right from the start. It could be, you know, it didn't matter how big the budget was. It was the artwork on the front of that cover that pulled you in. How do you come up with the artwork for that? Because it is very, very reminiscent of those old horrors.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I come up with the stuff. My memories of horror were going to Blockbuster, which was our video rental place at the time, every Friday after school. And then I would basically go there and have the choice of picking out the movies that I watched the weekend. And I'm the same way as you. The only way in Blockbuster, there was no social media, there was no internet, there's nothing to tell you whether or not these movies were good or not. You basically had to go in there and pick off the covers. And I always text Ben and say, man, we're just a little late. If we were around when Blockbuster was here, we'd make so much money because people would go in there and they see our covers, which,
I'd be so famous.
Yeah, they basically scream horror movies, like, and they're interesting, and they can tell you exactly what you're going to get, which is a fun, good horror movie. So, you know, that whole principle of making sure the cover art is appealing is something that, you know, with Forest of Death, that movie looks like a 70s and 80s horror movie. It does. Like, that just basically is what, you know, we're trying to get with Colgrave. We wanted a little bit more mystery in there. And I think you kind of get it with that cover. But what you're saying is exactly my mindset of when I tell the design teams to make these, out of all the cover art that they make, I have to be able to walk into a store and that's got to catch my eye. Because if you look at Netflix, if you look at Amazon, if you look at Tubi, you're scrolling through just screens and screens of covers, and you're giving each one a couple seconds. And, you know, whichever one you kind of click on, at that point, you have to see the blurb, and then the trailer has to catch your eye. It's not as important as it was in Blockbuster days, because we have, you know, podcasts like this telling people what to watch, or, you know, Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb. And there's a lot of services that are like, hey, this is a good movie, go watch it. But at the same time, I love independent horror movies. I love horror movies in general. There's a lot of times where I'm, you know, going through Amazon and I'm like, all right, no one's recommending anything, or I've watched all the recommendation movies. I want a wild card. And while I'm going through those screens through horror and like new releases, I'm going to click on the one that has a good cover. And I honestly think there's two things that I think as a filmmaker is, if you put a lot of effort into you have to put a lot of effort into your cover, and you have to put a lot of effort into your intro sequence. And I think there's a correlation between the amount of time that you put in your cover and your intro sequence, because it shows how much you care about the product. And some of the best series that I've seen, True Detective, some of these other ones, The Wire had a great intro scene, you know, all that stuff is really important. I do think that the devil's in the details with a lot of these movies.
You know, what's crazy about what he just said is, for everything a Colgrave, like, Brendan was great. He included me in every step from the germ of an idea to the absolute conclusion. So for the intro sequence, I was there with Tatum and we were watching the entire opening, and it was painstaking because he had to make sure he hit every single beat. And that's one long runner take with Mike Lamb in prosthetics standing alone in the middle of the woods and Brent walking down and hitting every single beat. And it was something that I think he allotted maybe 90 minutes for, and it went for 3.5 hours because it had to be perfect, because it was the opening of the movie. It was the biggest hit. It was the first thing where you go, oh my God. And he just could not let that go anything less than what he deemed perfect. And when it came to the cover art, If you go on my Instagram, you will see that there's an early version and it's okay. I liked it. And then just watching the evolution of things he would send me of, look at this one, look at this one, look at this one. And I remember thinking when I first saw what became the cover, I was like, God, I wish it was white and blue. And about 2 weeks later, it came back and it was white and blue. I don't know if it had anything to do with that, but I think people just probably said the same thing. But he goes through so many different versions to get that cover art correctly. He goes through so many different versions to get that shot and that scene and everything correctly. And it's just one of those things where the running joke is he's not a human, he's AI. Because the way his brain works is just no, 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 right, go. No, 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 right, go. No, maybe, no, no, go. It's very robotic, I guess, but it's also that he's so hyper-focused on making sure whatever he wants to see in his head or what he thinks people want to see, he's going to get that. It doesn't matter how many times, how many takes, how many hours, he's just going to get what he wants at the end. It's very interesting to watch how someone can be that committed and that dedicated where there's other people say, it's good enough, go.
It comes over, though. You watch those films, and I have to say, I think the cinematography in them is fantastic. You know, I it's probably very different, but back in the day, the films that they have to use now, and maybe getting it on that digital quality stuff, I don't know whether it's easier or not. But certainly, I think the cinematography is fantastic. And you can watch A Cold Grave, and you know immediately that it is related to A Forest of Death, even though they're very, very different movies. You know, it starts off with Roger recanting, and you know, well, once we get past that original scene, we have Roger talking us through what he's going to do. And it is that sort of found footage thing as well. What do you think is going to come next? As you know, the found footage thing was, I think it's been phenomenal in terms of horror movies and how it's been done. And actually, it transformed it. You know, when you think back, probably Blair Witch was the first one that really resonated with me. Very, very clever use of a film on you know, a relatively low budget as well. I think it was done incredibly well. What do you think is going to be the next trend in horror movies?
I don't know. It's always difficult for me to kind of, you know, see the trends, which is always kind of cool with the horror genre because we kind of move through different trends. You know, we had campy and then it goes serious and then campy comes back. And, you know, we had Skinamarink and Outwaters, which are two huge, pretty indie movies that were analog horror. They were just kind of very different and very polarizing movies. But all that stuff, if you can make a movie and get people to react to it, you did your job. That's basically my philosophy. So I don't know, elevated horror with When Evil Lurks was a very good movie. Talk to Me was a very good movie. Those are both kind of elevated horror. Talk to Me was kind of elevated. When Evil Lurks is very elevated. So I don't know. I think I wish campy would come back. I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult. Every once in a while, we get some that come out, but it's, you know, it's just we're not getting the 70s and 80s style stuff back. So, you know, maybe we'll explore that again. Forest of Death did phenomenally. You know, it blew out our expectations. I really thought that Forest of Death, people, I wanted to make a campy movie. That was one for me. And to see people react to that was fantastic. So I'm not throwing that off the, you know, off the books. That being said, I'd much rather direct like more elevated, more serious horror. Campy's a little bit trickier. And I think moving forward for us, the more grounded in reality, the more realistic stuff, it's a little bit easier to get performances from people and kind of keep that dark tone. But, you know, I'm not saying no to camp because I had a great time directing Forest of Death. It was fantastic. And I do miss those movies.
Oh, man, yeah. There's nothing better than a campy horror for me.
You know what's the hardest thing about that, though, which is why I love Forest of Death, is that ability to have that humorous tone while being serious. And I think that was one of the things that we were able to nail together was, you know, Roger can be the villain, but he can also kind of be funny the way he does things with just one-liners. And for actors, that's comedy is the hardest thing to do, especially comedy where you're not trying to be intentionally funny, like Monty Python, where they say funny things, but in a scene where a knight has getting all of his limbs cut off is not funny, but the way they do it is hysterical. And that's what campy's definitely very hard. Like Batman 66, great campy fun because it's treating itself as serious. It's giving out direct performances. But everything about it is ridiculous. And that was one of the things I loved about Forest of Death was so many things that were just, this is insane. This doesn't make much sense. But I love it. Like Dylan with the little lighter, like, I'm going to scare you. Click. I love that stuff. I think that was great. But yeah, it's difficult. And honestly, between the two, I like playing Campy Roger a lot more because it's so much more fun. But as an actor and as what I want to go see, I like Serious Roger a lot because that's a challenge. That's harder to delve into those emotions. I think what I'd like to see next is Roger riding a dinosaur with a rocket launcher in space is my ultimate goal. I don't think it'll be I want to treat Deadly Serious with Roger riding a dinosaur with a rocket launcher in space. I think that's what I'm
I'm just trying to do the science of how rocket launchers work in space. I think you'd be okay with that. Yeah, I think they still function. I'm not sure.
Fast and Furious went to space in cars. Don't question it.
Yeah, that's true.
I just want to see if Brendan can get me a dinosaur.
It's a big ask.
Yeah, I love how it's a dinosaur and not the fact that it's in space. That's the hard part.
I just want to see if that can happen.
Well, maybe that's what's in store for DBS Films. But I'd be interested to know what's coming next. So you said you got three movies coming out in, you know, relatively quick succession. Can you give us a little hint as to what's coming next and what you're looking at?
Yeah, so we have three movies in post-production right now. We have a Bigfoot found. So we're on a found footage binge right now. Basically, all last year we made found footage movies. So we have a found footage Bigfoot movie. We have a remake of a movie we did, Girl in Cabin 13. So it's something similar to like The Strangers, where these people go out to the cabin and there's people that come in there and try and basically kill them. Ben's in that movie as well. And that movie is also a homage to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There are people who use chainsaws to basically terrorize the people in the cabin. And then we have a remake of a movie that we did before, The Haunting of the Murder House. And that's also a found footage movie where paranormal investigators go into a house and bad things happen. And when I say found footage, I use it loosely because we do kind of, it is a cinematic style that is in the found footage, you know, arena, similar to what Cold Grave is. The last three that we did are a little bit more traditional cinematography, but the footage is still technically found. So they're definitely interesting movies. They have their own twists. If you are a horror fan, you will find different Easter eggs as far as stuff that I like that we've kind of used or try our own variations of for these movies. But yeah, all three should be coming out pretty quickly now that we have new editing process. So our stuff should be coming out sooner. And we're looking to shoot the first DBS movie of this year, probably in March or April. We're just gearing up for that now. So once again, we shot four movies last year. We're going to shoot four movies this year, and we're just going to continue to learn. You know, we're going to try and get better with each movie. We're going to take everybody's feedback and try and make our stuff as best as we possibly can.
You know, what's really cool about watching him work is, like, I'm not in Bigfoot, but I'm ridiculously excited for it because, one, I've seen The Mask. It's pretty cool. But he's also bringing people back. So Bigfoot has Andrew from Horror in the Forest, who's a great actor, and Tatum from A Cold Grave as the leads in that movie. So just as a fan of their work, seeing them come back is great. And then in whatever you're going to call Murder House 4, Murder House 3, it's again, it's Andrew, but then Stu's in that again. So there's the guy I really liked in Girl in Cabin 13, and I kicked his ass twice, is also coming back in that film. So if you're a fan of their work, or if you just understand decent actors, becoming good actors, becoming great actors, becoming familiar faces, you can kind of go on that journey with them. Like watching Stu in Girl in Cabin 13, I really liked him as an actor. Andrew in Horror in the Forest, I really liked him. And then you get to see how they progress and how they grow. And a lot of that comes with that comfort level of having the same director, the same people on set. But it's an incredible thing to watch. And not just that, but the way that they've raised their game and they've elevated while still bringing in fans from their community, it's awesome. Yeah. So from Bigfoot to Cabin 14 to Murder House, whatever's coming out next, it's a cool process to just watch. It's a very meta approach to filmmaking because it's not just watching the final product. It's going on the entire journey of the casting process, to the cast reveal, to the makeup people reveal, to the dailies on set, to the editing, to here's the first trailer, to here's all the behind the scenes, to here's how we're going to promote it, to now it's out in the first version at Shock Girl Cinema, who forgot to nominate me for an award for Best Actor, but I clearly would have won had they nominated me. But it's okay that Shock Girl Cinema forgot about that. We would have swept it all anyway because it's a great movie. From that to the final version that's coming out online that people are going nuts over. It's a super cool approach to filmmaking.
It is. And one of the things I think I said last time, so the last time you joined us, Ben, we were joined by Tyler Miller as well, who's in The Forest of Death.
He's also crushing it, doing every commercial under the friggin' sun. Every friggin' commercial he's in. If there's a good-looking guy in a commercial, he's in it.
What would Roger advertise?
Natty Light.
Of course.
Billy Blunt.
Of course. Of course. Now, one of the things we said about Tyler when he was on, normally in those type of movies, Brendan, when you cast a character and he's the good-looking guy who's got the good-looking girlfriend, that guy is not very likable in those movies. But the unique thing about Tyler is you watch the film and you're rooting for him. He's a good guy. He's very, very likable. I think it was a really good casting choice. Was that something you were looking for? Were you looking to break the mold, or did it just turn out that Tyler was really likable?
Tyler's just, that's just who he is. Like, Tyler as an actor is fantastic. I cannot say, you know, better things about him. He comes in prepared. He understands. Like, we got very, very lucky with the cast on Force of Death, which is one of the reasons why I think that the movie resonates so well, is that Ben knew what he was trying to do. Tyler knew what he was trying to do. Chloe knew what she was trying to do. Stephanie, everybody knew what they were trying to do, and they understood the vision that we were trying to get. And then they filled in the blanks with their own personalities and their own acting style, which is what a director wants. You know, it's like, I want to make sure that, look, this is the vision I have for these characters. Hey, your job, because I'm hiring you, is to act and kind of fill in the blanks, and let's see if we can find something organic in there to kind of expand, you know, these character choices. And I give them a lot of freedom on set to try and, you know, improv or kind of figure out like small little things. Because once again, I think the devil's in the details. And unfortunately, you know, as an indie filmmaker, time is an issue. Money's an issue. It's hard to really focus on these things. So if the cast and the actors can come in here and really take the space and the freedom that they're given to kind of grow and develop these characters, it just makes my job that much easier. And I think Tyler's an excellent example. He needed to play the good-looking boyfriend. He's kind of aloof. You know, he's there for a good time, and he's just inconvenienced by this monster in the woods. And that's just exactly what he played. And he did a fantastic job with that. I can't, you know, ask for anything more. It was definitely interesting to see as far as like the people who understand camp, because there's a lot of people who are like, why is he playing it like that? You know, why is he so dumb? And it's like, that's the character. That is the character that he needs to play. And he did such a great job. And I think the people who understand camp loved him. And once again, that cast and crew for that movie is fantastic. Like, everything, all the tropes and beats that I had in my head to hit were hit by them. And it's just a testament to Tyler. It's a testament to Ben. It's a testament to everyone. Out of all the movies that I've done, I think the cast for that one was probably the best.
If you look at what they've done afterwards, like, they've all gone on to do really good films, especially Stephanie with Pumpkin Man, and I guess Pumpkin Man 2 now, where we went out of our way to watch the premiere of that at Shock Reel, who also forgot to nominate me for Best Actor Award. But she was terrific in that. She had her favorite scene in the entire movie, where a pumpkin explodes on her face. Man, that's such a great cast. So much fun to work with everyone in there.
Oh, man. It is a great cast. It is a great cast, and it's a very, very good film. So as well as watching the Meth Gator film, Colgrave, if you've not seen it already, you need to go back and watch Forest of Death. Anybody who's listening to this, I would implore you to do that. And anybody who's listening to this who's interested in getting into the movie scene as well, either as an actor or as a director or at the level that you're doing it, Brendan, I'd be interested to know from you two guys, what are the biggest challenges you face and how have you overcome them?
You go first, Ben.
As an actor, I mean, the hardest thing to do for me is picking the right role, because, you know, I've had opportunities the last year, like really good opportunities, but thanks to that wonderful strike, a lot of budgets got cut. So there's that. This is a good role, but the pay isn't awesome. Travel's not included. The hotel's not included. I got a wife and I got kids. And it's that balance of, do I go make almost no money where I might be losing money, or do I take care of my family? And for me, it's always going to be my family. Like, my kids and my wife will always come before anything else in the entire world. Again, one of the reasons I love working with Brendan, you know, my wife's got a crazy work schedule. I got kids. Brendan's thing is, oh, we'll just get you an Uber. Don't even take your car. We'll just bring you an Uber. It's cool. And we'll get you back, especially in a cabin 14 where, you know, we had to rush a shot. It worked out perfectly, but we got to rush a shot because I got to get back home so my wife can go to work so I can take care of my kids. And there's most studios that they're not going to do that. And the other thing is, I don't like playing the same character over and over again. Like, Roger's the exception. Kevin, maybe too. That was a lot of fun. But once you get stuck in a certain kind of role, that's all you're going to end up doing. And I don't want to constantly play, you know, the drunk writer, the drunk rock star, the moonshine. I'd like to branch out. I like to do other things. And I'm afraid that if I keep doing that, like, I'll just fall out of love. And I left the industry for over a decade because I fell out of love with performing. I fell out of love with acting. I don't ever want that to happen again. I love what I do. I love this industry. I love being able to perform and entertain even people who don't like my work. It's okay because they watched it. And that's pretty cool because there's, you know, 80% of the people seem to like my work. And that, for me, is the hardest thing, is juggling that, you know, the role and my family versus a paycheck. And some of them have been pretty good, but it's wrong. It's not right for me versus that's a decent role, but God, I have to sacrifice not being with my kids and not being with my wife and losing money on it. And it's a constant juggling act. I just wish I could be Brendan and live in the most bougie part of Orlando on, you know, the highest floor, surrounded by naked Brazilians by the pool at all times, and just being fed grapes by Minions whenever he wants it. I wish I could have that, but I, you know, I've got a family and I can't do that. I get fed grapes, but usually because I throw nothing for my kids. So for me, that's honestly the hardest part, is picking and choosing what is worth it to me. Also, you know, I don't always want to get eaten by CGI gators. There's that too.
You still need to see that, and it is very, very good. What about yourself, Brendan? What are the biggest challenges you face making movies, you know, and having the company that you have there, DBS Films? What's been your biggest challenge, and how have you overcome it? Because clearly you guys are doing something right.
Well, I think movie making in general, and this is contrary to what a lot of people think. They think that they can become a director, a producer, a writer, and everything will be great. And I think that it's just problems constantly. You have problems writing the script. You have problems in production. You have problems in post-production. So my job is to just fix these problems to the best of my abilities. So filmmaking in general is just problem solving. So what my biggest problem is a lot of little problems that just are consistently throughout the way. But I do think that makes filmmaking unique. And I kind of made this movie, and this is a full disclaimer. When I first talked to Ben, I said, hey, I want to make a movie with one actor, and I want to put you in the woods, and I want a character-driven movie that's heavy on improv, and let's see if we can do it. And honestly, in my head, because this is so low budget, literally made this movie with one actor, and I think the biggest budget was, or biggest expense was, how many cigarettes that he smoked, and so how many
218
cigarettes. How many Coors Light or Miller Lights that he had a drink to get him in the character was our biggest expense. And nobody thought we could make a movie. Everybody that I talk to, whether it's, you know, film school kids or just people in general, think that you need $1 million to make a movie, because everyone comes to me and says, I got a great idea. Why don't you do this? And my response is, you can film it. You can make it. I said, I don't have $100,000. I don't have $1 million. I think this movie, which could basically be filmed on an iPhone and you could tell the same exact story, can be made by anybody. And this was just a random concept that we had where I was like, what's the cheapest we can get Roger in a movie? I don't know if it's going to work. let's just see. And if I can learn one thing from it, all I want to do is learn one thing from this that I can apply to another movie. It's a success. And so he made this movie. It got uploaded. It's going to be in all these streaming channels. It's 100% reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and is our highest rated movie by far, which is insane. That makes no sense at all. But here it is. This is where we're at. And it shows you don't need a budget. You just need to be a little bit more creative. You have to have a good actor like Ben, and you can do it. And I think that this movie, if you're a filmmaker, if you're somebody who wants to get into filmmaking, if you want to make your own stuff, go watch this movie, because this movie, you can do it. There is nothing stopping you from taking your friends out here for a weekend and making a movie with crazy stuff that happens to him, and getting, you know, full distribution, getting a lot of people to see it, and getting, you know, feedback on it. It's just, to me, having people watch my movies and give me feedback, whether it's good or bad, is so valuable, and it's just great. You know, it really, to have someone watch your stuff. And I was talking to Ben the other day. He's like, there's so many art projects, you know, where there's really good movies and nobody watches them. And, you know, you just really, to have people watch our stuff, to, you know, the community that we've been able to develop, we're very, very lucky. And, you know, I'm very, very fortunate. But it just goes to show you just got to kind of keep doing stuff. So if you're a filmmaker out there, if you're a director, there's nothing stopping you from, you know, starting to do this. Because once you make something, it's infinitely easier to sit back and learn from that, and also to get your foot in the door, basically meet cool people, because you have something to show them.
That's great. And that's fantastic advice. And I hope people out there do take that on board, that if you do have that idea and you do have that passion, just go out there and do it. What's the worst that can happen? You know what I mean? You guys have taken what you wanted to do. You live in the dreams of many people. You know what I mean? Like, we've just heard about the challenges there. We know that there are there, and it can be difficult. But there's a lot of fun to be had out there, and there's a lot of success to be had out there if you've got the right idea and the right passion. So that brings our episode to round about the close. We always leave things here round about the hour mark. So would you like to leave our listeners with one final thought?
Yeah. Go watch A Cold Grave 2 or 3 times, because if you watch it one time, you're not going to get it. But if you watch it a second time, you may figure out what's going on. And if you still don't, go talk to my friends at the Nightclub Podcast and watch it a third time, because they will explain to you what's actually going on. And if you still don't get it after that, then go watch Forced to Death again and then watch it a fourth time. But this time you have to go on Amazon and pay for it, because at that point you should be giving us some money. Also, cheers to my tall boy friends. I told you I wouldn't open this until A Cold Grave premiered, and I was 100% honest, and I hate gin.
You did say that. You did say that.
But this gin was pretty terrific. I saved just enough of it because I had a feeling I'd be coming back on here. So before we end, I'm going to cheers. I'm going to drink this gin because it's the only one I've ever liked in my entire life.
I'll pass that feedback on to Matt, because one of the things about gin is it is a mixer. But Matt makes his gin so you can enjoy them straight. And I tell you what, I think I'm a gin drinker. I love it. I love coriander-based gins as well. I think that's a really good one.
I chug this thing. It was going to be disgusting. And I was like, oh, shit, I like this. And then I mix it with a little bit of lemonade, and I like this gin. That other stuff can go to hell, but this gin I like.
I'll feed that back to Matt, don't you worry. Brendan, you got a message for our listeners?
Well, I got a message. I appreciate you guys having us on here. We don't have the budget to run television ads and do all, you know, this crazy stuff that, you know, Blumhouse and A24 do. But, you know, going through podcasts and kind of, you know, spreading the word or just talking to, you know, people who love horror is very, very valuable to indie horror makers, especially once you're first starting out. So I appreciate you having us here. I will always do podcasts. Once again, my goal is to find one fan and then find the next one. But, you know, if you're a filmmaker, if you love horror movies, if you love independent stuff, especially low budget independent stuff, take a look at Cold Grave. If you like Cold Grave, you can kind of go through our discography. You can see where we first started. All our stuff is on Amazon. All 13 movies are on Amazon or on streaming platforms. I know Plex is big in the world, and we're starting to get our rights for those. So somewhere our stuff should be free. And if it isn't free, you can find my contact information. I'll send you a screener. But basically, you go see our progress and you can follow our stuff. We have a lot of movies coming out. We interact with fans. Join our Discord if you want to be an actor in one of our movies. But you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Reddit. Message me if you have any kind of questions, comments, or concerns. If you're a small-time independent filmmaker trying to make your next feature movie, let me know. You know, I'm here to help. The reason I really am doing independent film outside of this is my passion is I really want to see independent film and new ideas and new filmmakers start to basically grow and become a force. I am, you know, kind of sick of a lot of these Hollywood remakes and reboots. There's some good stuff coming out there, but I know there's very, very talented directors out there. There's very talented filmmakers. There's a lot of people with very good ideas out there that just maybe need a nudge or a push in the right direction, you know, to kind of help them out, get their idea told. So whether you're an actor, whether you're a filmmaker, whether you're just a horror fan, please reach out to us or join the Discord. Please watch Meth Gator, watch Benjamin's stuff, because a watch for Meth Gator is basically a watch for us. I love seeing our actors go on to bigger and better things, you know, and to see their careers grow. It means the world to me. So, you know, that being said, yeah, if you like independent horror, if you like low budget horror, if you want to see us grow, you can find us somewhere and, you know, we'll be forever grateful.
100%, dude. I love listening to you talk. I love listening to Benjamin talk because I can hear the passion and I can hear that you care about what you talk about. And I'm hoping that our listeners pick up on that as well, because you can go and you can go to Cineworld or View or Odeon and watch whichever film you like, subscribe to whichever platform you like, and you can pay good money to people who are already multi-millionaires and put money in the pockets of billionaires. That's fine if you want to do that. I've got no issue with that. But what I would say is, the people who are really passionate and making fantastic movies and doing original stuff are the guys like you. And that is where the real joy in cinema is to be found. And I genuinely, genuinely believe that. I grew up watching those kind of films, films that were made on an incredibly low budget, but were made by passionate people who cared about the product that they put out there. And that's you guys. You know, it's still available today. And I genuinely believe that this is a growing industry. And like you say, the stuff like the CGI, it becomes more affordable. The making of the movies, hopefully for you guys, it becomes more affordable. And you can keep putting that product out there because we can keep enjoying it. And I just hope that, you know, the audience for DBS Films and for yourself, Benjamin, whether you're a part of that or whatever you go on to do afterwards, it just keeps growing and growing and growing. Because I think you guys deserve every success in the world, because it's fantastic to see what you're putting out there. And thank you very much for sparing an hour of your time for us on a Saturday evening in England or a Saturday afternoon in America. No doubt you're going to go and enjoy the weather more than I will after this, I can promise you. But thank you very much. We'd love to have you on again at some point in the future. Whenever you have, you know, your next success, we'd love to hear from you. So I will wish you both a good night. I wish all our listeners a good night. And we'll catch you on the next episode when we will no doubt be talking about something entirely different again.